Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 5th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator and all-around great guy, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. So tell me, D.R., what's been hot on the internet Twitterverse lately?
Yes, there was this fascinating controversy, and I think one of the biggest, what turned out to be one of the biggest climate stories of the year, that broke out a couple of days ago involving MSNBC host Chris Hayes, and the controversy started when he tweeted a piece by Eric Holthaus of Grist. Eric Holthaus has written for a number of other climate-related outlets talking about the...
And he lives in Boston, doesn't he?
I believe so, But Holthaus was doing a piece about the international, you know, literally a world on fire. Any country you can name, you have wildfires and extreme weather events everywhere. And so a freelance writer named Elon Green tweeted back at Hayes, quote, "It sure would be nice if our news networks, the only outlets that can force change in this country, would cover it with commensurate urgency. Acting as if there's nothing to be done is not excusable." And then Chris Hayes igniting a huge controversy online, responded, quote, "Almost without exception, every single time we've covered it, it's been a palpable ratings killer, so the incentives are not great," unquote. And that caused a dramatic amount of
Chris Hayes tweeted saying that stories about climate on his show and generally on the news media are... what, viewership killers? What was the word he said?
The implication was that stories on MSNBC, every time they've covered it on MSNBC, it has been, quote, "a palpable ratings killer," unquote. So that set off a complete huge firestorm of controversy with a number of environmental journalists and climate hawks basically responding that it was an inaccurate or callous or short-sighted observation by Hayes, although Hayes did have some defenders, one of whom was a fellow by the name of Farron Cousins, who I believe was a former colleague of Ed Schultz, another ex-MSNBC host, who said that Hayes was simply communicating the view of Hayes's employers, and Farron Cousins also speculated that because Hayes might have committed a faux pas by acknowledging that his bosses don't regard this issue as a ratings generator, that they may, as a form of punishment, get rid of Chris Hayes. Mm. So that it has become a complete firestorm of controversy with a lot of responses going to the issue of, there was one great piece on Grist basically saying, is the problem for profit media, is the idea that that you have, when you have media entities that are ratings first, news second, does that force a disavowal of stories that are of critical importance? Hayes later tweeted that there are a lot of stories that don't get covered because they're deemed ratings killers. And I thought about that in the context of, you know, what another environmentally themed issue, Flint, Michigan. Look how little coverage that got covered. I mean, let's be honest. If the water was bad in the Hamptons, that would be front page news and the top story every single night.
Yeah.
But because it's regarded as being about people in a perceived to be in a lower economic class, news executives say no one really cares and we're not going to cover it.
Flint's ongoing. I mean, that is nowhere near solved, right?
But it's a fascinating controversy regarding the issue of how much of what we see particularly in broadcast and cable news, is not about things that are newsworthy, things that are important, but things that news executives decide are, well, this will generate ratings, but this will not. And as Farron Cousins noted, you know, theoretically, you could have stories about pharmaceutical drugs that could kill you that news executives will decide, well, that's not really newsworthy, that's a ratings killer, we won't do this story.
There's a lot of ways to go with that conversation, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Right? Is it the profit model of the news media? And I guess there's always been a profit motive in the news media, right? From the time when Benjamin Franklin published his first paper, it seems like it's heavily more dominated now. Would you agree
that? Well, I'm going to go back to an argument that Tom Hartmann has long made, which is that there was a time when, particularly, you know, broadcast news, it was not a profit generator. It was a loss leader essentially, but it was considered to be a matter of prestige for the networks that ran these news divisions. It was perceived to be a public service that you know, even if they did lose money, they could make more money off on the entertainment division, and therefore everything would all balance out. Hartman has alleged, and I'm trying to remember this.
I mean, forgive me. What you mean is basically the Walter Cronkite model, where the three.
Yeah.
I mean, that was at that time in the '60s. Those things were not, those newscasts, which I remember watching, were not. They weren't ranked on profitability, right? They were they were just good journalism, right?
Yeah. Okay. Now Hartman has alleged, and I apologize because I don't remember the specific decision or the specific. It wasn't legislative, but it was a governmental action. But he alleged that early in the Reagan administration, there was a policy that Reagan's FCC changed to allow the major networks to put their news divisions under the supervision of their entertainment division. And one of the precursors to this, and others besides Hartman have brought this up, is Rune Arledge, who was the big concho at ABC Sports, who then later took over ABC News and was widely seen as focusing more on, you know, let's do stories that generate ratings as opposed to stories within the public interest. And that therefore this cultural change to move away from stories within the public interest to stories that are news generators is why issues such as, you know, the causes of all these wildfires and storms and floods are not covered, on broadcast and cable news.
It seems to me that, I mean, what the Rune Arledge model, right? Monday Night Football, the guy who created Monday Night Football, right? Yeah, he wants eyeballs, he wants money coming in because that's how he thinks. But it seems to me that's a symptom of this idea of neoliberalism that we've talked about. Basically, how our society is consumed with the idea that the bottom line is all that matters. The dollar sign is the only thing that matters. And that's what essentially I would say neoliberalism is about. And so, in that context, the idea that somehow the news division would be noble and not necessarily trying to make a huge profit, that seems like passé and old school. And I got a different question though. Do you think that climate stories are inherently uninteresting?
I certainly don't think so, but I think that there are. I think you make an argument that to a certain extent this is a generational issue that you have a generation of news executives who essentially came of age before the early 1970s environmental movement. So therefore, their sensibilities are not on the wavelength of we consider this important. I think going forward, as you have, executives from a different generation coming up, they may have more of a sense that this is an important thing, and they may try to, you know, lead coverage in this direction. But I think there's just this sort of this default assumption, this conventional wisdom that dominates a lot of news executives, that this is an issue not worth covering, and that therefore if anybody does want to have it covered, they may be in some rough waters and some rising waters too.
Well, I started doing some research for this discussion. I mean, there was people talking about, you know, the way climate stories become interesting or not interesting is how much human interest they have and how close they are to people's lived experience. I mean, there's a lot. I guess as people that have been in this game for a while, maybe many of our listeners, I mean, pictures of polar bears don't do it for me anymore, right? I mean, we have much bigger questions than the polar bears, and somehow using polar bears as the way to drag people into care about the climate, and even, you know, I mean, it's harsh to say, but even the loss of habitat for villagers in Alaska seems so distant to most people, right? I think you get the interest when you can connect climate change stories to people's, you know, asthma and their health risks in their town. I mean, then you start here. I think you may be hearing more conversations about climate. Well, we talk about this every summer, right? As the weather gets hot, people start caring, right? Because it's touching home. But I think that you could make interesting stories in climate, but they've got to be at some intersection of real science and human interest and accessibility to a lot of people, or else you, mm-hmm. or else you lose them. I mean, then it becomes this abstract thing about, you know, how many tons of yada, 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 and mm-hmm. people's eyes roll back on their head. Would you agree?
Exactly. And I think I've brought this issue up before, but there's also the issue of, you know, people only seem to relate to an issue when it affects somebody who they either know personally or they know in terms of a media or celebrity factor. And the comparison I've brought up before, and I think it merits comparison, is the way the media covered the AIDS crisis. How there was, you know, not a lot of coverage of it in the early 80s, some of it outright dismissive, some of it outright scornful. But then all of a sudden, once Rock Hudson had AIDS, and then 6 years later, once Magic Johnson had AIDS, all of a sudden the tone of the stories basically started saying, hey, yes, this can affect everybody, and let's really focus mm-hmm. in on it. Mm-hmm. Prior to that point, there was a book, I think it was called And the Band Played On by Randy right. Schultz, yep. that talked about the mainstream media's dismissal of AIDS early on, and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, now the mainstream media was focused on AIDS because it was hitting celebrities that people could relate to. So it going to turn out to be something similar to the, remember how much coverage of Superstorm Sandy got because it hit the media market. That affected the media market, and then all of a sudden there was massive coverage.
Right. So what you're saying is the empathy issue is the one that has to be bridged. And to tell the story of climate, you need to make people feel empathy. I guess I'm not even sure what empathy means. Empathy is recognizing the other in yourself, maybe, or mm-hmm. somehow. And setting up a story in that sense about climate change where you recognize yourself at risk in someone else is, I think, generates an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other thing I was going to say was that the same, to your point about the transformation of the AIDS crisis, I think the marriage equality stuff was the same kind of thing, is that people finally began to realize that their cousin or their son was gay, right? And all of a sudden mm-hmm. things begin to, but because it hit them personally. And the question mm-hmm. is how to get climate to be a personal experience for people, right? Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing is, if you look at what's going on all across the country, most notably with those car fires in California, it is hitting people personally really, really hard.
And it is, but in to your point then, to go all the way back around, no one's talking about climate change at this mm-hmm. Fire. It's car with two R's in the town of Redding, right out in California. It's the place with mm-hmm. the tornado, the fire tornado, right? The fires mm-hmm. are so intense. But I mean, even there, the media is not connecting those dots. Right? Mm-hmm. And this is something we've lamented about a lot, but man, how do you, I don't know.
Although Joe Rome of Climate Progress, I think years ago, he noted that it's going to get to a point really quickly where it's the only issue that the media talks about, because there'll just be so many of these things that you will be compelled to talk about it. There'll be no quarter, no way you can leave it out of the conversation. But of course, by the time that happens, imagine how much death will occur first.
That's right. I mean, I think the media has an endless appetite for superlatives, right? Mm-hmm. The unprecedented storm, and then they. You know, they don't go a step beyond that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, I think that what we should do, DR, is organize for you. We'll have a campaign and send I'll send tweets to Chris Hayes and see if we can get mm-hmm. you on his podcast. And you can explain to him what what's going on when it comes to climate change and some of the message, huh?
We certainly need the media to be all in on climate change.
There you go. All right. Well, look, what we should do is we'll put up links to some of the stories. There are actually a bunch of stories about this. You're quite right, DR. It blossomed very quickly. And poor, mm-hmm. I guess that shows where Chris Hayes is. It got as a kind of a cultural icon for progressives, right?
Exactly.
We'll put up links to that on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find this on Facebook at /massclimateaction. And of course, you can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all those the usual podcast outlets. What you should do is go to Apple Podcast and tell us how much you like DR, because he has great insight. Anyway, we'll close you where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thank you, DR, my media critic. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.